Hey folks, Sam Cedar here. You're listening to a free version of the Ring of Fire radio podcast. If you want the total show without commercials, head over to ROFpodcast.com and become a member of this program. Look, this is our main source of revenue for Ring of Fire radio, and you can help keep us on the air by signing up for a Ring of Fire podcast membership. For far less than a cup of coffee a week, you can support this program and get our full show. Head over to ROFpodcast.com right now and sign up. Much appreciated.
Welcome to Ring of Fire Radio. I am Farron Cousins, sitting in for Sam Cedar this week. Today on the show, Donald Trump couldn't stop himself from tweeting out anti-Semitic attacks on American citizens while also promoting himself as the second coming of God. We'll bring you the details. Chauncey DeVega from Salon.com is going to be here to tell us why Trump's racism might not be enough to prevent him from winning in 2020. Congressional primary candidate Isaiah James is going to be here to tell us why he's primarying incumbent Democrat Yvette Clark for New York's 9th District seat. And as always, I'll be taking your questions from Twitter. Just send them using the hashtag AskROF. And don't forget, you can go to ROFpodcast.com and sign up for the free one-hour version of the Ring of Fire radio podcast. And if you want the full show commercial-free, all you have to do is become a member. That is the best way to help support the show. That's ROFpodcast.com. You can also support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/TheRingOfFire, and become a member of our YouTube community, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So let's get things started today with the biggest news of the week. Well, obviously, we've got to start this week talking about that that Trump fella. I don't know that he's doing so well mentally. We have had multiple different instances just in the last few days of this guy. Basically, once he referred to himself as the chosen one, but not just the chosen one. He actually looked up to the sky while talking to reporters, proudly proclaiming, "I am the chosen one." And that wasn't even the most ridiculous thing that this man did this week. And that's very sad that something so crazy is not even the craziest. Nope, that is going to go to some of his tweets and statements from earlier in the week that were hugely anti-Semitic. So let's just start at the top here, right? We had Donald Trump come out and tweet earlier this week, said, "Sorry, I don't buy Representative Tlaib's tears. I have watched her violence, craziness, and most importantly, words for far too long. Now tears? She hates Israel and all Jewish people. She is an anti-Semite. She and her three friends are the new face of the Democrat Party. Live with it." There is no evidence whatsoever, obviously, to suggest that Representative Rashida Tlaib hates Jewish people. That is absolutely an overblown talking point from the Republicans. But what Trump is trying to do here is he is trying to drum up his base, get them excited, get them energized, and possibly even inflict harm on Rashida Tlaib. He knows what he is doing. I mean, when you talk about these representatives, you know, the members of the squad, AOC and Presley and Tlaib and Omar, the reason he hounds on them so much is because he knows that his base absolutely hates them. He also knows that these women are receiving death threats at a rate far higher than any other member of Congress. They've had to take on extra security. Their staffers have had to be trained specially to deal with all of the threats that are coming in for these women. So Trump knows exactly what he's doing here. That's why he is using such charged language, calling her an anti-Semite, saying she hates all Jews. He knows what he is doing, and he is trying to get her killed. Later on in that same day that he tweets this out, he retweets a quote from Wayne Allen Root, a noted right-wing conspiracy theorist. And here it is. Here's what Donald Trump tweeted out from his Twitter account. Thank you, Wayne Allen Root, for the very nice words. Quote, President Trump is the greatest president for Jews and for Israel in the history of the world. Not just America. He's the best president for Israel in the history of the world. And the Jewish people in Israel love him like he's the king of Israel. They love him like he is the second coming of God. But American Jews don't know him or like him. They don't even know what they're doing or saying anymore. It makes no sense. But that's okay. If he keeps doing what he's doing, he's good for all Jews, blacks, gays, everyone. And importantly, he's good for everyone in America who wants a job, end quote. And then Trump added the word, wow, exclamation point at the end of that tweet. King of Israel, Donald Trump proudly proclaims in a tweet. The second coming of God, which, for the record, for anyone who is not familiar with it, first and foremost, this is not a tenet of the Jewish faith. Okay, the second coming is not a part of that. Secondly, the second coming is not about God coming back. It's actually Jesus. Okay, there's no second coming of God. So Mr. Root is wrong on multiple different fronts here, as is Donald Trump. And we also cannot forget Donald Trump's statement to reporters earlier this week that, you know, any Jewish person who votes for Democrats either lacks intelligence or is disloyal. Now, that disloyal claim is, in fact, a slur that has been used against Jewish people for decades, if not longer, accusing them of having some kind of dual loyalty to whatever country they're from, as well as to Israel. You know, they're never quite on your side because of this dual loyalty. And Trump goes out there and just openly says, if you don't vote for me, you're a disloyal Jew or you're stupid. Folks, these are anti-Semitic comments coming from the sitting president of the United States. And some conservative lawmakers, obviously not happy about this. Others, completely silent. Some have no problem with it. Totally fine. The Reagan Battalion, totally good with these comments. These people think that this is okay. They think this is how the president is apparently supposed to behave. And it is not. Not only is this just inappropriate, it's also dangerous language, folks. That is one of the reasons we have to talk about this and we have to address this. You know, all of the people out there, you know, with the never again campaign, right? Which means never again are we going to allow the kind of persecution that happened to the Jewish people, or really to any people, you know, what took place during World War II, Nazi Germany. Never again means we're not ever going to let another group of people be persecuted in that manner, just slaughtered. And yet Donald Trump has repeatedly taken us closer and closer down that path. The language he uses is reminiscent of what was used in the lead up to Hitler's rise to power. You know, they're animals. There's an invasion. They're dirty. These are all words that Donald Trump has used to describe different groups of human beings. It's also, as a lot of people have noticed, the same language you hear on Fox News, the invasion language, the unclean language. But this week really, really took the cake on this with the anti-Semitism coming directly from the president himself. These are not good times here in the United States. And I know the economy, which we're going to talk about a little bit coming up here shortly, the economy's been big in the news this week. Jobs numbers had to be revised. We've got Democrats throwing out awesome plans. All of this, again, we're going to be discussing. But this right here, this particular story about Donald Trump, the anti-Semitism, the comments that he's making, the violence that he is attempting to inspire against Representative Tlaib, this is inexcusable. It is not something we can gloss over, and this is something that has to be talked about and addressed. It is past time for the 25th Amendment. And at this point, any lawmaker who remains silent in this is also complicit in this. We're going to take a break, but everybody, please remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Farron Balanced and become a member to our YouTube community. Go to youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. We have several different membership tiers, exclusive videos only available to members every day. So please go check that out. Again, it's youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. Welcome back to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins, sitting in for Sam Cedar today, right now running through the biggest news stories of this past week. So as I had previously mentioned, obviously the economy has been very big in the news this week. We're getting more and more signs of a recession right on the horizon. Trump's out there denying that there's any problems while at the same time attempting to kind of stave off the recession, I guess. Their big plan, and if you haven't heard about this, is to cut payroll taxes, right? Because that's their answer for everything. Anything happens in this country, the Republican go-to line is, well, let's just cut taxes. That's I guess, what we just do now for any problem, whether it's, you know, an economic recession on the horizon, maybe it's wildfires in California. Who cares what it is? Let's just cut taxes. That'll always solve the problem. The tax they're proposing cutting is the payroll tax, which is what essentially funds Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. So they want to cut social safety net programs, which is what would happen in order to put a couple of bucks each paycheck back in consumers' pockets, because they want consumers, you know, to pick up the economy. And they're tell you what, though, they're right about that. I mean, the plan is stupid and horrible. Don't get me wrong. And they shouldn't do it, because it's actually going to just exacerbate the coming recession. But putting more money in the pockets of consumers would absolutely help save the economy. And this is something Sam and I actually talked about last week on this show here. And I want to dive a little bit deeper into it, because it's something I don't think a lot of people truly appreciate. Our economy here in the United States, since at least the 1980s, has been designed in a way that it cannot sustain itself. We have had seven recessions since the year 1964. Five of those recessions happened after Ronald Reagan was first inaugurated through today. So this looming recession is not even counted in that. And those five recessions that happened since Reagan's election, all of them happened during Republican administrations, every single one of them. And part of the reason we saw this problem get so much worse once Reagan came along is obviously the tax cuts for the wealthy did not stimulate the economy. It did not increase spending. All it did was put more money in the pockets of the wealthy elite. Same thing happened when George W. Bush did it. Same thing happened when Donald Trump did it. That doesn't stimulate the economy. But another factor, and this might even actually be a bigger factor that happened when Reagan came along, was the destruction of the American middle class by destroying unions here in the United States. I forget the exact percentage. But when Reagan was sworn into office, you had roughly 40% of the workforce here in the United States was a member of a union. Today, it's right at about 10%. Those unions were the backbone of not just the working class, but the entire middle class here in the United States. When those unions started getting destroyed, when the union busters realized they had a guy in the Oval Office, Ronald Reagan, who had their back, as we saw repeatedly during that administration, they knew they had been given a green light to go through and destroy as many unions as humanly possible. And what happened? Well, wages began to stagnate. Inflation kept going up, so the buying power of the middle class continued to decrease. People couldn't collectively bargain anymore. We saw benefits decline. Started seeing health insurance costs rise because those unions weren't there to fight for us. And even in non-unionized industries or companies, their wages and their benefits still rose when unions were out there fighting, even if they weren't fighting for those people. Why? Because of competition. If you look down the street and you see that this factory is paying their people more, they're giving them better benefits, they're giving them more paid time off, your workers are going to go try to get a job at this other company. So how do you keep your workers? You have to do the same thing. So you may not even have a union, but you're doing better because the union down the street was fighting for better benefits and it trickled over to you. Not trickle down. This is trickle over. That's what was happening prior to Reagan. Well, all that went away. And that's why I say this economy is designed to fail, because this economy is designed to only benefit the top 1%. We're not taking care of the middle class. People, average wages since the year 1964, when adjusted for inflation, have increased by $2.38 per hour. That's what's happened to the middle class here. Hourly wage earners in 55 years, average wages have only increased by $2.38 per hour. Meanwhile, the pay gap between a CEO and a worker has gone from $20 for every dollar a worker makes to closer to $400 for every dollar a worker makes. And that's only growing. The inequality in this country has gotten worse because we're not giving workers raises. We're not raising the minimum wage. You want to create an economy that is not completely recession-proof, but will get us out of this recession recovery cycle that we seem to be stuck in since the 80s? Start putting money in the pockets of the people who actually drive this economy. It's not the top 1%, I can tell you that. It's the American workers. It's the consumers, the people who get paid. And then by the time they get their next paycheck, they've already spent 90 to 100% of the previous check. Not because they're bad with money, but because they have to get by. So when you increase their pay, that increases their spending. And maybe, God, just maybe they can afford prescriptions. Maybe they can afford to go out to dinner once a month. Because for anybody who's ever struggled financially, you understand what a drain that can be. I've been there. But if we want to create an economy that actually works and stops the recession and recovery cycle, you've got to put your faith and your money in the middle class. Coming up, I'll be taking your questions from both Twitter and the Ring of Fire Patreon. That's just ahead, so stay with us right here on Ring of Fire Radio. Welcome back to Ring of Fire Radio. I am Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire on YouTube, and I'm sitting in for Sam Cedar today. Right now, I'm going to take some questions from Twitter. So if you have a question that you'd like us to answer on the show, send it using the hashtag AskROF, and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at Ring of Fire Radio, and you can follow me at Farron Balanced. So let's get to the questions. So our first question today comes from at Orion2242, who asks, what would be the best way to take down the Fox Corporation legally, of course? I think, and look, we've seen this question a lot from people. You know, what can we legally be done about Fox News and their nonstop lies, the hatred, the bigotry coming out of this network? And I hate to say it, but legally speaking, there is nothing that can be done. There have actually been court cases, not unironically filed against Fox News, that have basically ended with the ruling saying that the media can legally lie. So that's, you know, they have the right to do it. Now, they don't have the right, obviously, to slander anybody. You know, they can't libel, but anything short of that, all bets are off, right? I mean, we do have freedom of speech here in this country. They're allowed to do this, both under their constitutional protections and the court rulings on the issue. And that is, you know, slightly unnerving, considering the fact that they are the highest viewed cable news network in this country. But the way we do it is we fight the misinformation. And I know people say, well, great, we've been trying that for a couple decades and it's not doing anything. Trust me, folks, it is doing something. It does have an effect. You know, when you look at groups like Media Matters, you know, they've been doing this for, 15 years now? They're very good at what they do. You know, they help take the people who may or may not believe what Fox says, maybe they're unsure of it, and Media Matters does a great job of saying, listen, no, this is not true, and not only that, here is the truth. Now, in recent years, with the, kind of explosion, I guess, of progressive and leftist media on YouTube and Twitch, those folks have done a phenomenal job of doing it as well. We do it here on our Ring of Fire YouTube channel, trying to fight the constant misinformation coming out of that network. And so that really is all that we can do. And here's the other side of it that some people may not want to hear. It's not just the lies and bigotry coming from Fox News. It's also the bias, the pro-corporate bias that we see coming out of other corporate media outlets. You know, CNN is absolutely awful. They truly are. And I think a lot of people seem to have forgotten that because, yes, a lot of the hosts really seem to not like Donald Trump. Sometimes they ask really tough questions of people from his administration and they make them look foolish. CNN is also super ready to launch us into another war the second they get the opportunity. Comcast, who runs MSNBC, was a huge supporter of the TPP. You know, Comcast is not a good company, and they own MSNBC. So we always have to be skeptical, not just with Fox News. And MSNBC, out of all of them, is the one that's, you know, not necessarily going to lie to your face or lie in general. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. CNN or MSNBC, excuse me, they do a good job of telling stories that are factually accurate. The issue, and some people miss this when you talk about corporate media is bad, the issue is not that they're lying, it's that they're not covering everything. The corporate board of directors, whether it's an MSNBC or a CNN or even a Fox News, they do dictate. I know Bernie Sanders took a lot of heat recently for his statement on Bezos in the Washington Post. Well, folks, that's not inaccurate. That is how things work. They may not sit there and walk down to the reporters and say, you can't talk about this. But everybody knows Crystal Ball with The Hill TV has been talking about this. She worked at MSNBC. She knows this. And this is how it is. So, yes, Fox News is absolutely the worst one out there. But not, let's not act like they're the only bad actors. OK, I do think we need to take these other networks to task for their omission of stories. And in the case of CNN, for their constant beating of the drums of war. So thank you for this question. Next question we have is from Twitter user Scotty Cameron, who asks, if a recession happens within the next few months, do you think Trump would start a war with Venezuela or Iran to distract Americans from the recession he caused with his tax cuts for the rich and deregulation of the financial sector? I can't put anything past this president at this point. You know, that's what's so horrible about it. Would he start a war with another country to do? Yeah, he would start a war with another country to distract the public. He would also probably start a war with another country just because he was having a bad morning. Maybe his eggs were overcooked. Who knows? That's how unstable this man truly is. you know, it's not always just about the distractions and, you know, trying to misdirect the public. It's because he's a very moody and a very temperamental elderly gentleman. He's got some very serious demons kicking around in his skull, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. But I think at this point, the attention, at least from the government, the federal government on Venezuela, has died down a bit. They don't seem to care much about it anymore. They're not harping on it every 5 seconds. It's almost like they completely forgot that Venezuela was even a thing. Iran, on the other hand, that hasn't been as prominent recently, you know, ever since Trump basically started his attacks on the squad. But it's still out there. And we know that because John Bolton is still out there. And John Bolton has never met a country that he wouldn't enjoy bombing. And that's the big danger with this administration. So, yes, it is entirely possible that as Trump grows more desperate, as this economy continues to do worse, which we got more bad news this week. They had to revise down the 2018 job numbers by a little over 500,000 jobs. So, yeah, things are actually even worse than we had thought they were. So as Trump gets desperate, because the only thing he has to run on is the economy, then we might see him listening a little bit more to John Bolton. You know, maybe Bolton goes in and says, hey, listen, remember when we wanted the public to believe that they were bombing the oil tankers out there owned by Japan? Maybe let's talk about that again. Maybe let's get that going in the public's head. Maybe we could do something about this. And, you know, the public, they're leery about jumping ship in terms of leaving one administration for another when we're in the middle of a war. I mean, that is a huge reason why George W. Bush won re-election in 2004. And that was their talking point, too. I mean, let's not forget that. You know, you always have to look at the historical context because, yeah, the talking point of the Republicans at the time was, we can't jump ship. You know, we're already in this stream. Let's not have it change course. Let's keep it going. Let's stick with what we've got because we don't know what this guy's going to do. We know more about the situation. And yes, I could 100% see the Trump administration doing this than trying to use that as a campaign tactic for 2020. We're going to get to some more of these questions after the break, but I just wanted to remind everyone, if you're not already following the show on Twitter, please do so at Ring of Fire Radio. You can follow me at Fair and Balanced, and you can support our work here by going to patreon.com/TheRingOfFire and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. We're back on Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins from Ring of Fire's YouTube channel, sitting in for Sam Cedar today. Right now, I am taking your questions from Twitter. Let's get back to it. So our next question is from Michael Smith, who asks, who do you think the best candidate in the Democratic primary is? Who do you think will win the Democrat primary? Well, to address your first question, who's the best candidate in the primary? I guess I've got to ask another question is, how do you define best? Are we talking about best in terms of policy? Are we talking about best in terms of who's winning in the polls right now? Are we talking about best in terms of who stands the best chance of beating Donald Trump in 2020? And the reason I ask that question is because almost all the answers to those, with the exception of who's winning in the polls right now, it's all the same. You know, whoever can beat Trump is going to be the person who unveils and talks the most about the best policies. And right now there's two. There's two. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. In my own honest personal opinion, a Bernie Warren ticket is absolutely the best possible chance we have at winning in 2020. They're the best two candidates out there right now. Again, in my opinion, you are free to disagree with me. Okay? I've been very, and look, all right, you know what? I'm now going to get off topic a little bit because I've got to talk about this. I have actually been very nervous and very restrained in coming out and specifically saying I support X or Y in the Democratic primary. And it's because when you look on social media, when you look on Twitter, these people are so vitriolic if you do not go for their person. And honestly, it doesn't matter which person. You know, if you say you don't like Andrew Yang, you got the Yang gang coming at you. I said one disparaging thing about a policy from Buttigieg one time on Twitter. And oh my God, you would have thought that I said he was the worst human being that ever lived when it was really I didn't agree with the policy he proposed. You know, same thing with Beto O'Rourke, same thing with Biden, same thing with Harris. You know, everybody right now is a little too tribal about their person. I like Bernie Sanders. I like Elizabeth Warren. And there's a lot of people out there right now hating on Elizabeth Warren, saying, no, she's a corporate Democrat who's going to be coming after the middle class. She's not going to represent us. Really? Could you literally point to anything in this woman's history in the Senate that indicates that she would favor corporations over people? The answer is no, you can't. If you don't like her, say you don't like her. If you don't like her policies, if they're not, you know, progressive enough for you, say that. Say that. But don't you dare come with this lie that Elizabeth Warren is somehow a corporatist in a progressive's clothing, because that's not true at all. Now, having said that, yeah, Bernie right now, if we were holding the primary today, I would probably go and vote for Bernie. Maybe that'll change. Maybe it'll switch to Warren. At one point, I was for Warren ahead of Bernie. But overall, I like them both. And I think they're both great candidates. And they've got some great policies I'm going to be talking about in the next hour of the show. But who is the best candidate? There isn't a single one. There are some, obviously, like I've said here, that stand out to me personally. People may disagree with that. People may completely agree with it. But the best candidate is going to be the one with the best, most progressive policies, because poll after poll is showing us that if you want to get those moderate Republicans on your side, you actually do have to go more progressive. Because Republicans do want Medicare for all. Republicans do want a Green New Deal. Republicans do want debt-free college. What they don't want is status quo. So there's the answer. Look for the candidates pushing those policies and accept no substitutions. Our next question is from @FernandoMZEV, who asks, what would be the long-term consequences for the DNC if they betray progressives again and rig the primaries in favor of a corporatist like Biden? I think this time around, they know better. Now, they've tried to be kind of sneaky, not necessarily towards Bernie, but just towards progressive members of the DNC, you know, average voters who call themselves Democrats. They, you know, with not doing the climate change debate, that's a horrible, not smart move on behalf of the DNC. You know, CNN has decided that, hey, yeah, we'll do a climate town hall and we'll have 10 or 8 candidates, I guess it is. And everybody's probably going to have, you know, 7 minutes to talk about the issue, which is pathetic. It's weak. It's ineffective. But hey, at least it's something, right? But in terms of the DNC engaging in the same behavior they did back in 2015, we've already seen that that's not necessarily happening. We may find out more as time goes on, but one of the biggest issues of 2015 was that they didn't hold enough debates. You know, the public didn't get the opportunity to see Bernie on that national stage, and they've rectified that. You know, they held tons of debates in 2008, held 3 in 2015, and now we've already had the 2 major debates. We got another one coming up in about a week or two. So I think they understand they can't hide people anymore. And they understand that the game is up. We already know what happened in 2015, and we're going to be watching them like a hawk to make sure they don't do it again. So I think we'll be okay. The long-term consequences, if they do engage in that kind of behavior, you're going to see a lot of people leave the Democratic Party, which, hey, maybe then we get some viable third parties out there. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Our last question today that we have time for is actually from Jose on Patreon, who asks, what makes a paper or article or stats, et cetera, credible? For example, when discussing climate change, what's to stop a climate change denier from saying the information you have is just fake news and shutting down the discussion? You know, this is a really interesting question because this is something that we have to deal with on a regular basis when engaging in talk with conservatives or people who just outright deny reality. So what makes it credible? Well, first and foremost, obviously, the source. And when you are talking about an issue like climate change, look at the scientific journals, the peer-reviewed scientific journals. And if you're able to present somebody with all of this evidence, all the peer-reviewed articles, the stats, the, you know, facts and figures and charts and graphs and all that fun stuff, if they still look at it and say, nope, that's fake news, then it's time to move on. You know, there are plenty of people, I'm friends with plenty of people who do not share a single political belief that I have, but I'm still friends with them. We just don't talk about politics because there's no sense in talking with people who are irrational on the issue. There is a time and place and, you know, people that can be reasoned with, that can be debated, and the results of which could change their mind. But there are plenty of people who that will never happen for. You know, if they're just going to claim fake news on everything you say, everything you present to them, then stop wasting your time. Go work on the people who actually could be swayed, who do believe in science or who do believe in math, who recognize that the media is not lying to us every single second of the day. Work on those people. There are plenty of people, again, who are so reachable in this country, and there's plenty who are not. And that's what drives me crazy when you see these people like Ben Shapiro, always on Twitter, screaming at people, debate me! Why? Why? It's not going to change your mind on anything. We're not going to convince you that everything you've ever said is stupid, even though it is. So why waste our time, folks? Work on the people who absolutely are open to change. The rest of them, be friends with them, talk about other things, stay off the issue of politics. After the break, we'll take a look at the criminal justice reform bills that were unveiled this week by Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. That's just ahead, so stay with us right here on Ring of Fire Radio.